Jaya Gopi Jana Vala Bhakti Vardhari Jaya Gopi Jana Vala Yashoda Nandana Bhaja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Bhaja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Yamuna Tira Banachari Banachari Jaya Dada Madhava Kuncha Vihari Parivrajak Acharya Ashtota Rashata Shri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura Prabhupada Ki Jai All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga All glories to Srila Prabhupada Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayamudirayet nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki So, Hare Krishna, my apologies, I'm speaking twice in 3 days, and sorry that you all have to deal with it. Please give me your blessings, that it may at least serve to purify me, at least. We're reading from Canto 10, Chapter 13, text number 61. This is the Rama Vimohan Leela. We're coming. This particular Leela is coming, in one sense, to a close, because the actual Brahma Vimohan Leela, the act of the bewilderment of Lord Brahma, is coming to a close, and we're transitioning into Brahma's prayers in the next chapter, which are really, really quite, quite beautiful. Tatra dvahat pashupavam shashishutva natyam Brahma dvayam paramanantam ugadha bodham Vatsan sakin ivapura parito vichinbhad Ekam sapani kabalam paramishcha chashta Tatra dahat pashupavam shashishutva natyam Brahma dhayam paramanantam agadha bodham Vatsan sakin ivapura parito vichinbhad Ekam sapani kavalam paramishcha chashta Please chant. Tatra dahat pashupavam shashishutva natyam Brahma dhayam paramanantam agadha bodham Vatsan sakim nivapura parito vichinvad Ekam sapani kavalam pamamishcha chashta Tatra dahat pashupavam shashishutva natyam Brahma dvayam paramanantam agadha bodham Vatsan sakin ivapura parito vichinvad Ekam sapani kavalam paramishcha chashta In the word for word, tatra. There in Vrindavan. Udvahat. Assuming. Pashupa vamsha. Shishutva Natyam. The play of being a child in a family of cowherd men. Another of Krishna's names is Gopal, he who maintains the cows. Brahma, the absolute truth, Advayam, without a second. Param, the supreme, Anantam, unlimited. Agadha bodham. Possessing unlimited knowledge. Vatsan. The calves. Sakin. And his friends. The boys. Iva pura. Just as before. Paritaha. Everywhere. Vichinvat. Searching. Ekam. Alone. All by himself. Sapani kavalam. With a morsel of food in his hand. Parameshti. Lord Brahma. Achashta. Saw. A translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Then Lord Brahma saw the absolute truth, who is one without a second, who possesses full knowledge, and who is unlimited, assuming the role of a child in a family of cowherd men, and standing all alone, just as before, with a morsel of food in his hand, searching everywhere for the calves and his cowherd friends. The purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The word Agadha Bodham, meaning full of unlimited knowledge, is significant in this verse. The Lord's knowledge is unlimited, and therefore one cannot touch where it ends, just as one cannot measure the ocean. What is the extent of our intelligence in comparison to the vast expanse of water in the ocean? On my passage to America, how insignificant the ship was, like a matchbox in the midst of the ocean. Krishna's intelligence resembles the ocean, for one cannot imagine how vast it is. The best course, therefore, is to surrender to Krishna. Don't try to measure Krishna. The word Advayam, meaning one without a second, is also significant. Because Brahma was overcast by Krishna's Maya, he was thinking himself the supreme. In the material world, everyone thinks, I am the best man in this world. I know everything. One thinks, why should I read Bhagavad Gita? I know everything. I have my own interpretation. Brahma, however, was able to understand that the Supreme Personality is Krishna. Ishvara Parama Krishna. Another of Krishna's names, therefore, is Param Ishvara. Now, Brahma saw Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appearing as a cowherd boy in Vrindavan, not demonstrating his opulence, but standing just like an innocent boy with some food in his hand, loitering with his cowherd boyfriend's calves and cows. Brahma did not see Krishna as Chaturbhuj, the opulent Narayan. Rather, he simply saw an innocent boy. Nonetheless, he could understand that although Krishna was not demonstrating his power, he was the same supreme person. People generally do not appreciate someone unless he shows something wonderful. But here, although Krishna did not manifest anything wonderful, Brahma could understand that the same wonderful person was present like an ordinary child, although he was the master of the whole creation. Thus, Brahma prayed, Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. You are the original person, the cause of everything. I bow down to you. This was his realization. Tam aham bhajami. This is what is wanted. Vedeshu durlabham. One cannot reach Krishna merely by Vedic knowledge. Adurlabham atma bhakto. But when one becomes a devotee, then one can realize him. Brahma, therefore, became a devotee. In the beginning, he was proud of being Brahma, the Lord of the universe. But now he understood. Here is the Lord of the universe. I am simply an insignificant agent. Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. Krishna was playing like a dramatic actor. Because Brahma had some false prestige, thinking that he had some power, Krishna showed him his real position. A similar incident occurred when Brahma went to see Krishna in Dwarka. When Krishna's doorman informed Lord Krishna that Lord Brahma had arrived, Krishna responded,
"Which Brahma? Ask him which Brahma." The doorman relayed this question, and Brahma was astonished. "Is there another Brahma besides me?" he thought. When the doorman informed Lord Krishna, "It is four-headed Brahma," Lord Krishna said, "Oh, four-headed Brahma. Call others. Show him." This is Krishna's position. For Krishna, the four-headed Brahma is insignificant, to say nothing of four-headed scientists. Materialistic scientists think that although this planet Earth is full of opulence, all others are vacant. Because they simply speculate, this is their scientific conclusion. But from the Bhagavatam, we understand that the entire universe is full of living entities everywhere. Thus, it is the folly of the scientists that although they do not know anything, they mislead people by presenting themselves as scientists, philosophers, and men of knowledge. Om Agyanata Nirandasya Dhyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunnivitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutade Swayam Rupa Kadahamayam Vidati Swapadantiham He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dhinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gora Tushe Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Ungarate Girim Yat Kripam Tamaham Vante Sri Gurum Dinatarinam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschate Deshatarine Vanchakalpa Tarugyascha Kripa Sindhu Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vas Adi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Brahma Vimohan Leela, we're coming to the close. This is kind of like a tipping point of sorts, especially this particular verse, so I'm going to zoom out a little bit so we can hopefully zoom in. So just going back very quickly, Lord Brahma stole the cowherd boys. We've heard this every day for the past month. Lord Brahma stole the cowherd boys and the calves, and he started to realize maybe I made a mistake, and then when he went back to check, he saw that the calves were still there and the cowherd boys were still there with Krishna. Then he became a little more bewildered. Then as he was looking, Krishna manifested all of these Vasudev forms in order to heighten his bewilderment. And while he was looking at those Vasudev forms and trying to wrap his head around what was going on, we hear in verse 57 that due to their effulgence, due to his bewilderment at seeing so many of his Ishtadev, his external senses became completely stunned. And that's where we hear this, that he was like a village doll in front of the, he was like an insignificant doll in front of the village deity. He just became completely bereft of any ability to use any of his senses. But he still had sight, and so he was thinking, what is this? What am I seeing? This blinding effulgence is coming from my Ishtadev, so many of my Ishtadev. And then we hear this phrase, Anipe Api Drashtam. Then he lost his faculty of vision. He lost external consciousness. So then he couldn't see anything. He was completely covered over and completely just in ecstasy at what he saw. And then he comes back into external consciousness, and the first thing he sees, which is described in the prior two verses, is devoid of all of that Aishwarya that had just completely overwhelmed him from Vishnu's effulgence. He saw the beauty of the land of Vrindavan, and Prabhupada gave us many wonderful descriptions and very nice descriptions of the fact that there's no envy in Vrindavan, and then it's only sweet, and it's just beautiful. And so that's the first thing that Lord Brahma saw when he came out of this state of complete astonishment and bewilderment, and where he actually lost his sight. So he sees Vrindavan, and he sees the trees, and then he just sees the whole atmosphere there, and he's thinking, wow, this place is so beautiful. And then here, this verse is the description of him seeing Krishna. So he saw Vrindavan, he looks around, and the thing is, he didn't immediately notice Krishna because Krishna had withdrawn all of his Aishwarya, all of that opulence. Prabhupada points out in the purport, he was just standing there like an innocent boy, just like he was before. He had a little food in his hands, and he was searching, even to further one of our Acharya's comments, that to further the bewilderment of Brahma, that Krishna was actually, at that moment when he regained consciousness, he was searching again, looking for the cows and the calves, just looking around there, just to really make Brahma think, what just happened? And this is amazing. So I want to break down this verse a little bit, because the Sanskrit is quite telling, and it's also quite beautiful. So tatra uduhat. So there, in that Vrindavan, which was described in the previous two verses, that beautiful place, uduhat, appearing and assuming the form, this pashupa vamsha shishutva natyam. Pashupa vamsha means the cowherd people. Vamsha means like your clan, is one way, or your family. So in the family of cowherd people, pashu means like a rope. So they herd the cows, they bind the cows for milking. It's a nice way of saying the family of cowherd people. Shishutva. Shishu is a child, a young child. It's a sweet word. It's like little shishu, you know. Twa means like the nature of, appearing in the nature of a little child. Shishutva natyam. Playing or dancing, or as Prabhupada says in the purport, he was like a dancer. Krishna was playing like a dramatic actor. So this shishutva natya, because we hear in the beginning of this pastime that this was completely engineered. This wasn't one of the places where Krishna is. You know, in Vraj, there are many pastimes where Krishna is underneath completely the spell of Yogamaya so that he can relish something. But this pastime is very much in the mood of Krishna is facilitating it in order to teach Brahma a lesson. So he's playing this role here. He's not actually, when he's searching for the cows there, he's doing that in order to bewilder Brahma. It's not that he's also under Yogamaya and he stopped and is searching for the cows and he's, you know, it's the goal here is to teach Brahma a lesson. So shishutva natyam, he's playing like a small child. This is what Lord Brahma is seeing. The last two words of this verse are parameshya chashta. So this is Lord Brahma, what he's seeing, a chashta. And what does he see? He sees all that. He sees that this little boy who's in the family of cowherds, he's in the pashupa vamsha, he is Brahma advayam. He is that same person who taught me the Chatushloki of the Bhagavatam, who taught me Advaya Tattva. He's Padam Anantam. I just saw that he is endless. I thought there was one of my Ishtadev. I just saw innumerable Vishnus. Padam Anantam. His limit, he has no limit. And even what I could conceive of, even though I already knew that in an abstract way, he's unlimited, and to some degree, Brahma has much more experience than your average Joe of that unlimitedness. But even Lord Brahma's conception could not contain the actual Padam Anantam, the unlimitedness of Krishna. And so he was bewildered. And then Shukadev Goswami says, Agada Bodham. Bodham comes from buddhi, so intelligence. And Agada means very, very vast, deep. And Prabhupada says, like the ocean. He says, this is the beginning of his purport. He says, it's full of unlimited knowledge. And then he compares this knowledge, Krishna's knowledge, and Krishna himself, to the unlimited ocean. And then Prabhupada very sweetly gives us this analogy where he talks about the Jaladuta. and how when he came across the ocean on the Jaladuta, looking out and seeing the vast ocean for days and days, it takes months, I think 1 or 2 months, to cross the Atlantic Ocean in order to come to America. It takes quite a long, long time. And so for days, you just see expanse of ocean, ocean, more ocean, and you can't accommodate how big that is. And Prabhupada would often quote this frog in the well analogy, that seeing one's surroundings, the frog sees the well, and then if some other frog comes and jumps in the well and says, "Hey, I've been to this place. It's called an ocean. It's called an ocean, and it's way bigger than this thing that you have. This is small. You know, this is nothing compared to the ocean." And so then the first frog will say, "Oh, so it's way bigger. It must be 2 times bigger, maybe double the size. You know, that would be really big if I had double the space that I have in this well." And he said, no, way bigger than that. Okay, maybe 5 times. No, you don't understand. Okay, maybe 10 times bigger. No, you don't understand. 100 times bigger. There can't be anything more than 100 times bigger than my well, you know? And so then eventually, one just has to give up on trying to calculate these things. And Prabhupada, he actually goes through a segue, and then at the very end of his purport, he revisits this thing in a very heavy way, speaking about the speculative nature of the scientists, which Prabhupada didn't so much attack modern science, but he attacked the surety of modern scientists. He attacked the veracity with which they stake their claims against all other thoughts, which is admitted by many, many scientists in the higher sciences like quantum physics and astrophysics to be one of the biggest downfalls of science. It turns into another form of fanaticism. Just like religion, you know, they constantly say, "Oh, you believe in this, you just believe in this, you just believe in it," without any, you know, evidence, without any quantification of it. But the thing of it is when we look at science, and once we get out of the rudimentary aspects of science, we start working on axioms that we have to take as theoretical. And so, in one sense, it's just like another religion. It's a theory based on a theory based on a theory. So Prabhupada, in speaking heavily like this, and the way he encouraged his disciples who were in the scientific field to approach science, he very much attacked this fanaticism. I think it's important for us to understand this, because other religions have done a really terrible job of articulating this point. And we come from the Vedic paradigm, which is extremely scientific. If you look at the sciences that are given in the Vedas, if you look at the advances in math, you look at the advances in astronomy, you look at many, many different types of advances, a lot of things have come from the Vedas now, or things that we've found through the empiric method have been substantiated through our understanding in the Vedas. Substantiated is not the right word, but we come to those realizations through science, and then we find them in the Vedas, and we find out, how did they already know this? You know, we find things like that. So, in one sense, it's our duty just to show that this is there. Or the duty of those who are in this field, because I'm not a scientist. I find it a big headache. But it's very important that we understand what Prabhupada's mission was in that regard, so that we also don't go and blabber, you know, and just childishly repeat what we think Prabhupada is trying to say in this regard. So that was a bit of a tangent, but coming back to the verse, so this Agada Bodham, this unlimited intelligence which Brahma is seeing. See, Lord Brahma is the most intelligent person in the universe from a material perspective. And he's quite a devotee, because in the very beginning he meets Krishna and shakes his hand. He meets Vasudeva and shakes his hand. So, there's not very many people who can come and bewilder Lord Brahma. Just imagine, you're Lord Brahma. Your son is Narada Muni. Your sons are the four Kumaras. Basically, all of the greatest sages in existence are your sons. You met the Lord when there was nobody else even manifested yet. You shook his hand. He told you this is the absolute truth, and you know it. Now work for me. He was pretty sure of his intelligence. And so this Haggadah Bodom, for him to realize this, for him to see that this is unbelievably, this person, Param Anand, to this Param Ishwara, Krishna, his intelligence is so vast, so much more than my intelligence. Actually, one last thing, going back to the scientist, one quote that I really respect from Albert Einstein, and I don't drop secular quotes very much, but this one's pretty good. He said, "Now that everyone in the world thinks that I'm the most intelligent person, my highest realization is that I know nothing." Because once you gain some insight, the nature of real knowledge is that it will give you an understanding of how small you are. And this is another thing that astrophysicists come to. They see this universe is so big. In Newtonian physics, we think we have all of these laws that the whole universe has to abide by. But now we're getting to the point where we can look, and there are environments, there are places, there are things we can observe where these laws don't have any effect. So actually, it's like we're like a speck of dust floating on a sunbeam. It's really nothing. So Albert Einstein had this realization. Lord Brahma is having this same realization, obviously to a much deeper level, but he's saying, Haggadah Bodom, this person's intelligence is so much more vast than anything I can possibly comprehend. And again, because he realizes he is Brahma Advayam, he is that non-dual absolute truth, which I learned about in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, in the beginning of creation. This Krishna is that non-dual absolute truth, and he's a higher manifestation of, he's the origin of all the manifestations of that non-dual absolute truth, is the way we should say it. I originally thought that Vasudeva was, that Mahishadeva was, but now I see that this little boy, Pashupa Vamsha Shishutva Natyam, who's playing in the family of cowherds, he is the origin. And for Lord Brahma, this is groundbreaking. And it's very freeing. And Prabhupada says, in the purport, he says that Lord Brahma was puffed up at his position, and now he has become a devotee. Which means now he has entered into Vraj consciousness. Now he has seen, Krishna has given him the mercy, that now this is what I worship. This is what I worship. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Vajami. Govinda is that original person, not Vasudev. Vasudev is coming from him. He just showed me so many Vasudevs. Govinda is that original person. And I Tamaham Vajami. I worship him. Aham Vajami. I worship him. So this is Lord Brahma's realization. And this is amazing because in the next prayers that we're going to hear in the next chapter, Lord Brahma speaks about how knowledge is ultimately, in the ultimate sense, because we as sadhakas, we have to study and we have to learn these things and we have to move forward. We can't just jump into, you know, the shucking off of knowledge. But Lord Brahma, he moves into this position by Krishna's mercy that I don't want to take shelter of that knowledge anymore. I want to take shelter of you, and I want to take shelter of this beautiful place. I want to take shelter of your people. I just want to be a blade of grass, he will say later on in the next chapter. Just make me a blade of grass so that I may catch the dust of any one of these people's feet. Any one of these calves, cowherd boys. Let a peacock walk on my head. You know, he doesn't say, let a peacock walk on my head, but that's the implication of make me a blade of grass in Vraj. Any one of the residents here, any one of them is worshipable for me. So this is Lord Brahma's realization. And what this is, is this is the beginning of Jnana Shunya Bhakti, which is, see, up to a certain point in our sadhana, up to, for the majority of our sadhana, we have to take shelter of the knowledge that is given to us. Krishna is God, Krishna is the Supreme Person, I am His servant, I am eternally meant to serve Him, and my constitutional position is like this, and Maya is like this, and I have to do certain things in order to stay out of Maya and to stay in Krishna consciousness, because it's an effort. But when one comes to this place where Lord Brahma has come to and is coming to and we have other examples also, then this jnana shunya bhakti arises. Shunya means zero, jnana means knowledge, and bhakti means bhakti. So bhakti that is free from jnana. Actually, it's free of the constraints of Krishna being God. So Lord Brahma hasn't walked all the way into that threshold, but he now has an aspiration that he can enter into some relationship like that in Vrindavan. Because the thing about the Vrajvasis is they do not know that Krishna is God. On your average day to day, they see what Lord Brahma sees here. As Prabhupada puts it so nicely in the purport, he says, "It is not that he is four arms, Narayan is Chaturbhuj, but the Supreme Person resembles a human being." Oh, I'm sorry, that's the next purport. It's similar, that's what I thought. That was the... Next, let me grab two pages. "People generally do not appreciate someone unless he shows something wonderful. But here, although Krishna did not manifest anything wonderful," the implication here is he didn't manifest his Aishwarya. He didn't manifest his godness to Brahma. He was just standing there as a little boy with some food in his hand, and he was searching for the calves and the cowherd boys. So much so that when Brahma came back into external consciousness, he saw Vrindavan first. If God is standing there in front of you, you're going to see, it's Narayan. But actually, he came to external consciousness, and Krishna was still there. He's still there in front, and he sees Vrindavan, and then he's, that's that little boy. That's that beautiful little boy. So the Vrajvasis, they don't know that Krishna is God. Sometimes when they go into a feeling of separation, they gain the knowledge because it augments their ability to pray to Krishna as God. And then it augments their separation. But as soon as there's unity again, they can't hold the conception. And even many times when they're separated, they just can't understand. Yogamaya keeps them covered. They can't accommodate the idea that Krishna could be God. They're worshipping God. Nanda Maharaj is worshipping Narayan Shilas, and there's a Nisringadev deity in Nandagaon. They're worshipping God to protect Krishna. They worship Durga Devi to protect Krishna. So this is Jnana Sunya Bhakti, and this is the Bhakti of the Vrajvasis. This is what Lord Brahma wants now, because he's seen that this is my Ishtadev. This is the person who I love, who I want to love, who I aspire, who I worship. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I believe in the Brahma Samhita that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, in his commentary, he explains that Lord Brahma, in these prayers, he's aspiring for Madhurya Ras, that he's aspiring to be a Sakhi. I don't know which term he uses, but for Madhurya Ras. And so that's quite elevated. That's quite elevated. This is his aspiration. And so since I'm moving towards this explanation of Jnana Sunya Bhakti, I thought it very interesting to give some examples that we hear in the Bhagavatam of this happening, because one, they're very sweet, and two, they underline what we as sadhakas are supposed to, in a healthy way, aim towards. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, Pujala Ragapatta Gaurava Bhange. He said, you keep these things on your head and worship them, which means we have a conception of them, we know that they're our goal, and we think about them while we do our Vaidhi Bhakti, while we do our service, while we carry out what we're supposed to do, and before we have taste. The way we get taste is by contemplating that which is supremely tasteful and which is given by our Gurudev. So the Bhagavatam gives us a beautiful example of this Jnana Shunya Bhakti when Uddhava visits Vrindavan with the letter for the Vrajvasis and then the separate letter for the gopis. When Uddhava gets to Vrindavan, he sees, first when he goes, he sees the beauty of Vrindavan, because it said that it manifests itself so that he can see that this is Vrindavan, and he can feel that, Vrindavan is such an amazing place. This place is so wonderful. I thought Dwarka was wonderful, but this place, this is special. But then when he gets closer and he starts getting to where the Vrajvasis are, he starts to see that everything here is very dark, and the streets are dirty, the houses don't look like they've been kept. And then he sees some of the Vrajvasis, I believe, and he sees that they're all very skinny. What's wrong? what's going on? And then he goes, because he has his, he's first to go to Nanda and Yashoda, because Nanda Maharaj is the king of Raj. And you go see the king first when you go somewhere. So he goes to Nandagaon and he goes to the palace of Nanda Maharaj, and he goes in and he sees Mother Yashoda just sitting and not, she looks so skinny, and the house is dirty like any, she hasn't cleaned in so long, and they're just in separation like anything. And then he goes to them and he speaks to them and he says, I have a message from Krishna. And so then they become happy because they hear Krishna. Oh, Krishna has sent something for us. But then he speaks to them and he tells them philosophy. He says, dear Nanda Maharaj, Mother Yashoda, why are you lamenting so much? Krishna loves you so much, and he is Ishwara. He's the super soul in your heart. He's never gone. He's always with you. You know, the super soul, Krishna, is always there in your heart. There's no reason to lament. He'll always be there. He's always gonna be looking out for you. There's no separation. So give up this lamentation. And he tells them so much philosophy, and he explains to them the tattva of Ishwara. He explains to them the tattva of who Krishna is. And finally, after so much explanation, Nanda Maharaj says, okay, thank you. That's very nice. You know, thank you for your words. But I'm just a simple cowherd, man. I can't, you know, it was very nice what you said. You're very learned. You know, it's good to see you. But enough. So Uddhava leaves, and then Nanda Maharaj turns to Mother Yashoda turns to Nanda Maharaj and says, did you understand what he was saying? And Nanda Maharaj says, I do understand what he was saying. Because Garga Muni, he told me that Krishna would have all the qualities of Narayan. And so what Uddhava was telling us is that Narayan's name is also Krishna. That Narayan also has the name Krishna, and he's the super soul. So it just went right over their head. They got the philosophy. Uddhava is also, he's a Premi Bhakta, and he understands the tattva of who Vasudeva is and who Krishna is, because he's the topmost Dwarkavasi. So who better than Uddhava to explain to you? If you could sit down with Uddhava, he could explain to you in a very, very succinct way, you know, who Krishna is. Who better than him to explain? And it just went right over their head, because the Vrajvasis, they cannot accommodate this idea. Even in most cases, which is why Sri Vishwanath and our Acharyas, they point, and Prabhupada also, I didn't check though. I won't put words in Prabhupada's mouth, but I know that Sri Vishwanath explains that this is orchestrated by Krishna, and that he is cognizant of what's going on in this pastime. And the reason he does that is because in most of Krishna's pastimes, he goes by the name Mugdhata. He gives Yogamaya the ability to orchestrate everything so that he can actually enjoy it and relish it and be there. Because that's what Krishna wants. He doesn't want to pull the strings and, okay, now the coward boys are going to go, and today Sudam is going to beat me in wrestling, and that's for his pleasure because he's my devotee, and I'm just going to be there and I'm just going to let it happen, and because I'm God, and really I could just, if I wanted to, I could just put Sudam on the ground, and you know, he wants to actually be beaten. He wants to relish that. He just wants to be another Vrajvasi. And so this Jnanasunya Bhakti, this is what Lord Brahma has realized, I want to aspire to. I want to be like these Vrajvasis. In fact, he doesn't even say, I want to be like these Vrajvasis. I just want to be a blade of grass so I can get the dust of their lotus feet. Somehow or other, give me a connection with them. Just give me a connection with them. And I worship this Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Lajami. So it's 8:25. I'll stop here. Sorry if my presentation was a little tangential. I'm trying to work on nice, succinct presentations. Any questions or comments? Corrections also are quite welcome, please.
Ayusha. Nice class. Really appreciated your retelling of the Uddhava pastime, his entrance into Braj. Just two small things. On this point about God being unlimited, I was reading yesterday something very nice by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was defending our Gaudiya position in light of attacks from Christian theologists who say that how do these Hindus think they can worship God in the form of a deity? The truth can only manifest in thought. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, what makes you think that he can manifest in thought? The mind is also material. So just as the material elements are limiting, the mind is also limiting. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says something really far out. He says, you can discover God within the heart through some degree when there is prema. Through some degree. You can discover God within the intellect to some degree when there is knowledge of Him. And you can experience God to some degree when you can see Him outside of you in the form of the deity. But in all of these manifestations, there is some aspect of idolatry, because God is so unlimited that no matter who experiences Him, whether it's within the core of your heart, whether it's in your intellect, there's going to be some element that's like still human in a sense. You know what I'm saying? It's still based on
your perception.
Your, like, if I say blue, you're going to think of everything you know to be blue.
Yeah.
You know? So, and of course we know that Sri Vishwanath says, but still Krishna is impressed. Oh, he's thinking about me. So yeah. Krishna still likes the fact that you're trying to think of Him, and then He reveals Himself. But what Bhaktivinoda Thakur was trying to point out was that God is so unlimited that don't think you can capture Him within your intellect or within your heart or within your vision, you know? And there's always some... So anyways, that was a nice point. And then I was wanting to know just a little bit about your thoughts, this idea of Gyanashunya Bhakti, which you presented so nicely. Sometimes in our tradition, the word jnana means knowledge that leads to liberation. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's not what Lord Brahma was ever interested in. We never see Him being interested in liberation. Yeah. And here in this specific context, you're bringing out that Gyanashunya refers to knowledge of, bhakti that is no longer inspired by knowledge of Krishna's opulence or His power, but rather inspired by the sweetness of Brajbasis. And I always thought this is a very fascinating context because, you know, this idea of Achintya Bheda Bhed?
Yeah.
Because Sri Vishwanath uses the example that the knowledge of Godhead, of the Brajbasis, is kind of like straw floating in milk.
Yeah.
So when you boil milk in a village, you put a little straw so that when the milk is about to boil over, the straw rises to the surface.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's when the villagers know, oh, the milk is about to boil over, let's turn the gas down or turn the fire down. So he says, this is what the Brajbasis' understanding of God is like. It's there, but it's very much kind of, because Jiva Goswami says, if there's no knowledge of His Aishwarya, then it's not so Madhurya. What makes it Madhurya is the fact that it's God acting like a little child.
Yeah.
But of course, it's not something that they're conscious of, or like you were pointing out, Nanda Maharaj was like...
It's more of an ontological
point. Yeah, it's like deep down inside.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was just kind of curious. Yeah. It's there, but it's extremely hidden, you know? Anyways, it's a very subtle topic. Because it's one of those Achintya Bheda Bhed topics, I think. It's simultaneously there, but simultaneously not there, you know? But I was wondering, this exact term, Gyanashunya Bhakti, if you could speak a little bit more about it on this, and also, like, where did you read it, and if there's a commentary or a purport or a particular section that I could read later on my own.
Yeah. My understanding with the Gyanashunya Bhakti is that, because this is at a very high level of practice, and it doesn't even necessarily mean that now it's free of the gyan of Krishna's Aishwarya, like, because that's very much like a Vaidhi Bhakti, Rag Bhakti, like, transition, you know? But Gyan Shunya Bhakti is at such a high level that it's where now your bhakti is no longer limited by whichever ways it can be limited by that knowledge. So you're already not motivated by the fact that God is God. You know, somebody who's moving into Gyanashunya Bhakti, it's like when you actually step into becoming a Vrajvasi. So a Rag Bhakta who's at Bhav or who is at Asakti, they still have knowledge of the Tattva, but it's not their motivation. You know what I mean? So it's like you said, it's very subtle. It's even more than that. It's the point where you transfer into a relationship with Krishna, and it's actually a real thing. And now, like you said very nicely, the idea of Krishna being God is some sort of weird abstraction, because your reality is that you're with Krishna, and that He's a coward boy, and you're a Vrajvasi. They're Vrajvasis. I like this point, and I always wondered about this straw floating in the milk. I very much like this, but it always rose questions in my mind. Well, when does it happen and why? And is it just random? Does that, because that
when you take the analogy, then that means that, okay, the Aishwarya pops up every now and again. If I go and I take a pot of milk and I put a piece of straw in it and I boil it, the straw comes up intermittently. It may come up once every 2 minutes. It may come up once every 5 or 10 minutes. I want to say one thing. Yeah. So I was wondering about that before when I read that. It's like, you know, you hear something and then some nagging like doubt or question sticks in your mind. And you're like, well, okay, but that doesn't answer the whole thing for me. Like, when does it happen? And I remember reading that, and I believe this is in the Gopi Geet chapter of the Bhagavatam, where, because that's when the gopis are in, it's the Bhagavatam's, other than the Brahmara Gita, it's pretty much the highest state of separation that we get to hear about the gopis in. And Sri Vishwanath there, he explains why they're praying, oh Parameshwara, oh Dinabandhu, oh please be merciful to us, you're merciful to everybody else. And so he says, wait a minute, these are the gopis and this is the rasa dance. Why is it that they can understand that Krishna is God? How can this whole thing be facilitated if that is there? And then he says, so the Rajvasis, the point that I made earlier, they only know that Krishna is God in the height of their separation in order to augment that feeling. So in the height of their bhav, like Mother Yashoda, when Krishna eats dirt, and then Mother Yashoda says, let me see what's in your mouth. Let me see what's in your mouth. I know, your friends came and they told me you were eating dirt. Because he lies, because that's part of the rasa. Children lie to their mothers. Little children, I didn't eat any dirt. No, I didn't. My friends are, they're lying. They're lying about me, you know, they didn't, they're not telling the truth, you know, I don't know, they're all conspiring against me. And so Mother Yashoda is in a state of ecstasy because anxiety is a very, very strong stimulant for Vatsalya Ras. We even see in the material world, a mother's anxiety is her love for her child. When you go away for the first time, when you're 12, you go stay at your friend's house or whatever, 9 or whatever, your mom is thinking, oh my God, where's my son? When a child goes to school for the first time, the mother can't handle the fact that now he's not with me for that 6 or 7 or 8 hours of the day. I know Indian men who are 30 years old that still call their mother every day. Every single day. And that's sweet, you know? That's sweet, but it shows the anxiety. They don't do it because they do it because they know that she's going to be really angry if they don't make that phone call. So even in the material world, we see this. In the spiritual world, this anxiety, it's a very, very strong stimulant for this rasa, you know? And so in that, Mother Yashoda, because this anxiety stimulates some feeling of fear and some feeling of anxiety for Krishna, she's able to see that bit of Aishwarya there. But it's really only in these types of situations. And Sri Vishwanath specifically says separation. As far as I'm open to more information. I want to hear. What were you going to say? Yeah.
And I was just going to say the same thing. It's only when there is feelings of separation that this knowledge of opulence arises. But no, thank you. Very nice explanation. I'm sure somebody else has a question.
Was just thinking on this concept that you brought up, the Jnana Sunya Bhakti, and in terms of Lord Brahma coming to that stage, and thinking, I mean, is as you were explaining in your answering, is a very elevated, and I think you're referring to when the devotee now is not limited by jnana of Krishna's position, but rather being completely absorbed in just loving Krishna, you know, as equal or, you know, their child, etc., etc.
Yeah.
The Vrindavan, you know, prema.
Yeah.
Or bhakti, braj bhakti. You know, obviously from our limited capacity to understand this you know, most exalted position, even Brahma gets bewildered by it. So yeah. What to speak of, you know, some, you know, person like, or, you know, myself. So the concept of pure devotional service, Srila Rupa Goswami says, you know, anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma jnanavrita. So devoid is devotion that is devoid, or is there is no trace of jnana and karma.
Yeah.
And the jnana that is explained is, so this jnana sunya, or the devoid of jnana in pure devotional service, is this using jnana for measuring. You know, in one sense, measuring Krishna. Measuring. In one sense, Srila Prabhupada brings it up, this up. You try to calculate, you try to put Krishna within the realms, or the absolute truth, within the realms of knowledge. I can explain it. But you can't.
Yeah.
It cannot be explained. It's beyond that. So then the translation that Prabhupada gave in Rupa Goswami's verse is, you give up a speculation, or basically trying to understand Krishna by your mental capacity, or by your intellectual capacity. So that defines pure devotional service. So then we have Lord Brahma, who comes to the position of understanding that he can measure Krishna. He can measure, he can, you know, with all his knowledge, the fact is that he doesn't understand.
Yeah.
It's way beyond.
Everything
falls short. But he's still relating to Krishna with full knowledge of Krishna. So when he sees Krishna, according to what I understand, is that he's seeing Krishna, but he's understanding who Krishna is. And then, when he offered his prayers, now that we come in chapter 14, he offered these amazing, beautiful prayers with full understanding of Krishna. And, you know, Krishna is listening, but it is explained that he's, you know, thinking, you know, actually, it's good, but, you know, I want to go and, you know, be with my friends.
Yeah.
So obviously, Krishna says that he gets more pleasure with, you know, this. Well, in one sense, you know, that's the question that I have. This, it seems, this jnana sunya is like pure devotional service too. You have different levels of intimacy. You have different rasas, mm-hmm. and different rasas have different mood, and Prabhupada sometimes explained that you have, you know, different size of cup, but they're all full.
Yeah.
So it's not that, you know, one is better, you know, they're all full.
Yeah.
So obviously you go deeper and deeper, but a Dasya Bhakta that is in Vaikuntha is perfectly,
it's
pure. It's pure, it's devoid of all these things, it's devoid of the contamination of jnana and karma. So in one sense, it seems that, you know, this jnana sunya, there's a Vrindavan jnana sunya, there's a Vaikuntha jnana sunya. I may say.
I just want to preface by saying thank you. It was a really nice comment, and I will attempt to give my thoughts, but forgive me, because you're my senior, and I apologize for my audacity here. I shouldn't be. It's an awkward situation, you know, but I know where you consider me.
This is over my head, so I really don't, and I haven't read, you know, I usually just keep myself on the, you know, those things.
So you brought a lot here, which is really nice, and there are a couple points that I can think of. First off, anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma jnanavritam. Shunyam refers to material desires, and anavritam refers to jnana, karma, and adi. Adi means other things. So
So jnana and karma, adi meaning yoga, tapasya, these other things, anavritam. Pure bhakti should not be eclipsed by jnana and karma, because Rupa Goswami and Prabhupada explains this very nicely, and they do a good job of explaining it in Bhakti Shastri, that Rupa Goswami is saying that this is also a definition of how you can practice pure devotional service even if you yourself are not pure yet. So pure devotional service in practice is free from having jnana as the goal. Because if jnana eclipses your bhakti, then it's no longer bhakti, it's jnana. If karma eclipses your bhakti, if it becomes your goal, then it's not pure devotional service. If yoga eclipses your bhakti, then it's just yoga now. It's just exercise, you know? Or if you can do Ashtanga yoga, which you kind of can in this age, but if you can somehow, if you can do that, then it becomes yoga. It becomes Ashtanga yoga, not bhakti. So there's a difference here in the pure bhakti that Rupa Goswami is giving in this definition and jnana shunya bhakti. Because jnana shunya bhakti, again, Lord Brahma is coming to the realization that he wants to aspire for the position of the Vrajvasis. We can even say that his realization here is he comes to the understanding that he can't understand Krishna. And so he wants to go above that idea of trying to understand him in his position and just worship him, which is what the Vrajvasis do. So something like that. And then you made a point about the love of Vaikuntha and the love of Vraj and these different levels. And yes, that's the thing. Those are all applicable to this definition of Rupa Goswami. To some degree, because Rupa Goswami's definition is talking about Vraj. Because he's saying Krishna Anushilanam, Anukulyena, Krishna Anushilanam. It's meant for Krishna, which means Krishna means five things. It means Krishna, his entourage, his dham, his pastime, and his qualities. Means these five things are encased, that our acharyas tell us, in Rupa Goswami's definition of pure devotional service. So these other things, they're prema, but prema for Ram, prema for Dwarkadish Krishna, prema for Narayan and Vaikuntha is not the same type of prema that is aspired for by the Vrajvasis. But yeah, the main thing, these are two separate things from my understanding, from my readings, that this jnana karma dhyanavritam and jnana shunya bhakti, they're very much like this. Jnana karma dhyanavritam, you and I can practice. I can go right now and in a philosophical way, I can examine my life because I have to take up jnana. Bhakti jnana is very important for me as a practitioner. We have to learn the Bhagavatam, the Gita, these books, because that can give us they are stimulants for us eventually rising to this platform by Guru's mercy, because Guru gives us mercy and then we have to practice. But when we get to a stage, those things are left behind, and the only thing that is there is rasa. The Vrajvasis are purely on the platform of rasa. Now for me, that's probably lifetimes ahead, but yeah, we can safely say for all practitioners, this jnana shunya bhakti is, we want to understand what it is, because we have to understand it as an abstraction, because we can't experience it, but we have to understand what it is so we know what we want to aspire for. And then in that way, we can use jnana in the right way. We don't think, because otherwise, if I study the Bhagavatam, I memorize the whole Bhagavatam, I learn all the philosophical points, but I don't understand that that's actually not going to be the thing that gets me into Vraj. It's only useful insofar as it culminates in my desire to serve Krishna. It's only useful insofar as it becomes a way of serving Krishna favorably as he desires, if that's what he desires from me. Then it's all for naught. Prabhupada talks about the professional Bhagavatam reciters and how what they do is useless. It's even detrimental. They know the Bhagavatam. They may know Rasa Panchajaya by heart. You know, these five chapters of the Gopi separation, they may speak them every day. But why are they doing it? And this is in Bhagavat Shravan, this is in Smarnam, this is in what we're meant to do. So there's difference, but I think that's your question. Jnana karma dhyanavritam, jnana shunya bhakti. Brahma is aspiring. He sees that I want that. It's way up here for me. I'm completely bewildered. And therefore, Krishna, like, that's the point you brought up in the next chapter. Krishna says, okay. Your prayers are okay, but I want to go play with the coward boys. Like, I've had enough. Now, that is a subject of a whole nother hour or two, so we won't get into that in a deep way. But this is because Brahma's not on that platform. He's just realizing that I want to be on that platform. So Krishna's like, yeah, good. Very, very nice. You're on the right track. Now I have to go, because this is what I do. And that's my understanding. Please forgive any faults. I think we have to stop because it's 8:45, and some devotees have told me to not keep it long-winded, so. Jai Ho, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Shri Shri Kishore Kishore Ki Jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai.